Hey everyone, and welcome to Scouting the League. The guests stay red hot this week with someone you will surely recognize. That is, if you watch the NFL Combine. But he is not just a good-looking face and a whistle, but a scout with a long run of success in the NFL. Before we introduce him, let me remind you to like, subscribe, and share this podcast. Give us a five-star review. Most importantly, share with whoever you can. As always, joined by Neil Stratton of Inside the League. You can find him on Twitter at Inside the League. I am Roderick David at Right Step ADV. You can find me there. Tell me how much I don't know about football and how poor I am at, doing this podcast. But last week's episode with Nick Polk hopefully helped you navigate the free agent waters as we transition from wave one of free agency, lots of money being spent, to wave two. Still have questions on the cap? Either go back and listen if you haven't, or let Neil or I know, and we will work on the answer. Maybe get another cap expert back on the program. But enough about last week. Let's get to it today. Today's guest, Mark Gorsak. Mark spent nearly 30 years with the Pittsburgh Steelers in roles from Blesto Scout all the way up to Area Scout, covering every part of the country. A Seal Bracato Award winner from ITL, that's Inside the League, for his contribution to the scouting community. He's been to four Super Bowls, can't even count the number of All Pros and Hall of Famers he has helped scout. Many of you may recognize him as the official starter of the 40-yard dash at the NFL Combine, now doing more scouting for the Senior Bowl. He will be a pivotal member of the inaugural Big 12 Conference Pro Day coming up later this month. And yes, was even the first GM of the Pittsburgh Gladiators of the Arena Football League, a guy that knows football and certainly knows scouting. Mark, welcome to the podcast.
Rod, I appreciate it. Roderick, I appreciate it. Neil, I appreciate it also. And I may have you do my obituary, okay?
I don't know. I may
Or my
not be able to keep
eulogy,
the tears.
whichever it may be, or both.
Yeah, I'll go to
Appreciate
my
the accolades.
I'll go to my Derek Zoolander and my the Yagoogly, I believe, is probably how I pronounce it. So I don't know if you want that, but no, it's great to have you on. Again, a guy that's been around for again, not to age you, but you've been around football for a long time. You've seen a lot of different things. Give us a quick timeline again. You touched on, again, you were an area scout, touched every part of the country. Talk about your scouting progression, kind of where you came from and where you ended up.
I started out doing being a Pittsburgh Steelers Blesto rep in 1995, and I had a fascination about scouting. At that time period, no one wanted to be a scout, and the scouting staffs were real small during that time period. And I was a pro liaison at Weber State, wearing a lot of different hats, and I mean a lot of different hats. I was the precursor to director of football ops. I was administrative coordinator, wide receivers, tight ends, special teams, punters, kickers, liaison for everything. I was the right-hand man to the head coach, and I was burnt out. And I was looking to get out of football and get into athletic administration or scouting. And then all the classic scouts during that time period would come in, and I watched them interact. They had so much fun together. The Hal Athems, the Ray Biggs, the C.O. Bracatos, the Mike Cartwrights, classics. And the camaraderie was so good, and they joked around, had so much fun, and they watched tape and they rated players. I said, man, I like to do that. And that's how I started to network. And Don Deitch got me in. He called the Steelers up when they had the Blesto opening and told them they should hire me, and they called me up to interview me, and I got the job, thank God.
And Mark, let's go. Now you left something out. That you used to snap the ball to someone of note
Well,
at one point in your career.
I made Joe Montana famous. Without me, the guy'd be nothing. I was his high school center. Okay, who would have thought that two high school teammates would have been to what collectively eight Super Bowls and won six? That's
That's my favorite trivia question about Mark right there.
Hey, it was funny too. Was Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks had Joe Montana on their podcast, Move the Sticks, and Jeremiah goes, JD goes, well, I would read all your accolades, but we won't have enough time to interview you. But as former scouts, we have one pressing question. And Joe goes, what's that? And he goes, Mark Gorsak, was he really your center or was he any good? And I was running 4 miles and I was listening to the pod. I almost like, crap my pants. I said I had to stop, start laughing.
Yeah.
And Joe said the right answer. Yes, he was, and yes, he was good.
There we go. There we go. Always nice to have Hall of Famers giving you the shout out. Again, things have changed a lot since you started. What would you say the good, the bad, the biggest changes that you've seen in scouting? Like you said, 95, nobody wants, again, nobody knows what a scout is. Nobody wants to do it. Long time on the road. Again, it is a highly sought after position now here in 2024, and has been maybe for the last 10, 15 years. It's gotten popular. What would you say the biggest good and maybe a negative of all that more popularity in the scouting?
Oh God, I could go on and on and on. There's no concise answer to it. When I started in 95, you have to realize I was on the West Coast, doing the West Coast, and that they had all the ball players back then. Okay, the SEC, well, we'll just say Southern football in general was growing, okay, into what it is now. Okay, a hotbed for football where almost all the players are located at. But when I started out on the West Coast, man, Washington, USC, UCLA was just loaded with talent. And it just blew my mind when I'm looking back. In fact, the other day I went back to my Blesto books. Okay. And I wrote this short list out. Keyshawn Johnson, number one pick for the Jets. I was one of my first players. Gave him the
Wow.
Wonderlic test, too, in fact.
Nice.
He didn't do very well on it, but he was very smart. He didn't care.
Yeah, it didn't matter.
Jonathan Ogden, UCLA Hall of Famer. Donnie Edwards, he played at UCLA linebacker, longtime Kansas City Chiefs, and moved around. Lawyer Malloy, Washington. Tony Gonzalez, Cal Hall of Famer. Terry Glenn, offensive tackle. Ryan Leaf, did Ryan Leaf also?
All right. We could
But
do a whole podcast episode on the scouting report for him, I'm sure.
I actually. Ryan was coached by my former coach at Weber State when he went to Washington State, Mike Price. And Ryan, I think if he had a good coach, Ryan was a big Pittsburgh Steelers fan. No one knew that. His dad was a Steelers fan and all that stuff. And I think if he had Bill Cowher, it would have turned out different for him. So I just think, being in the right situation, right coaches, and all that stuff, helps shape a man
Yeah,
too.
absolutely. Without question, agree there.
But in that time period, there wasn't a lot of players at schools, like there is today. Like today, you go to Alabama, like 1 year of Alabama, I did 14 players on defense.
Right.
They only play with 11, but
Yeah.
because of rotational players, the trends, nickel, dime, situational pass rushers. Back in that time period, if you had 10 guys, which USC always had, and Washington always had, and UCLA had, seven, eight. You had 10, the rule of thumb was 2 day visit. 1 day offense, 1 day defense. You didn't care about special teams. Now, God, you go to these schools, even the mid-majors, they're going to give you 10 guys.
Right, at least.
The players have grown because of specialization and also because of the fact they have their own recruiting departments. They're digging up more players now than they ever did before. They're discovering them. They're all getting, pushed down to the lower levels and all that stuff now. Everyone's loaded. So the volume of players just it was made a big difference.
Yeah.
Now, Mark, we've talked a lot about NIL and the transfer portal and how it's given players more opportunities now. Does that make scouting better because there are more players who actually get tape and actually get an opportunity to get snaps to see them and you don't have to project maybe as much? Or is it harder because, I'm hearing scouts are showing at Oklahoma, they're getting a list of 25 guys. They're going to Memphis, they're getting a list of 15 guys, just like you kind of alluded to. Is it harder to vet that many guys, or is it easier because at least guys are getting on tape and you're actually able to see them play football rather than have to just guess based on triangle numbers?
I just think the portal situation is such that whatever grade they carry from that previous school, they have it at the new school. And the pro liaisons who promote those guys because they took them in there, but they're really just depth factors. They provide depth for them, and that's I think that's a fallacy. Too many people jump in because of money, bigger is better, and all that stuff. Sometimes you just better stay where you're at, okay? Because you're going to get much more tape. You're going to be used more often, you know, instead of getting buried. Like, there was a young man at a small school here in Pittsburgh that was on Senior Bowl watch list, okay? And I was excited because I knew the head coach, too, and all that stuff, you know, to go over there and watch this young man. Well, he left. He went to a bigger school. Didn't play. You know, so what's his chances now? Okay, so they, you know, he had that COVID year, so he's going to stay another year, but does it really work out? There was an article where, 60% or 63% of portal transfers play less snaps because all they are is depth. They're the new JCs, so buyer beware.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mark, again, you can agree or disagree with me. Again, one of the things that, you know, with these portal guys is – I've heard people and I've heard scouts say that, hey, now we've got two schools to get character. Again, as an area scout, one of your big jobs is to figure out who this kid is, what makes him tick, what drives him. Again, what are the issues we need to know about? I was on the other side where not only does I've got two schools of character, but neither school knows him. He was here for 8 months and he's at this school for 6 months. All of a sudden he decides to come out. Neither staff really knows the kid. It was everything just to get him on the field, just to get him the playbook. The athletic trainers didn't know him. Academic counselors hardly knew him. So instead of having a deeper profile of character, really knowing who this guy is, how he's going to fit our franchise, it was very topical information, who his family is, again, what classes were he in. And I really thought as an area scout, that made my job a lot harder to figure out what can this guy ultimately be, because his character is going to determine how good can he be long term. What are your thoughts on that? Would you agree, disagree? Did you experience
No, I agree
that?
With you. It just makes it a lot tougher because new school is a short baseline. Okay, they really don't know them. They know generalities, and to be really truthful, in some of the other schools, okay. When these young men get recruited and they commit as juniors, and you're talking, you have a relationship with the position coach, and you go, hey, did you recruit this guy? He goes, yeah. He goes, what's the family like? Did you do the home visit? Yeah, but I really don't remember because that was 2 years ago. He was an early commit, and I was on to the next class. Mm-hmm. They forget. Their mind becomes hazy and fuzzy about the young man, too.
Yeah.
So you really got to do more and more digging. And it's funny, too, because some of these websites that do player interviews, they get some valuable information. It's worth listening to.
Absolutely. And
sometimes, you know, the athletic profile of some of these guys, and it's like, man, they go in some deep detail. Or their local newspapers, you know, where you're digging into, I don't know if you guys had the service sports scan, where they gave you all the headlines that Absolutely. You can read every day. And then you go to that article because there's something that interest you about that young man, or he got in trouble or whatever and all that mm-hmm. stuff. But sometimes those are more valuable.
Yeah.
And that's why the physical meeting anymore is valuable also. You know, it's particularly if you can meet them at the school before they get coached up by agents.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So you can find out more, plus building relationships in the building.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let's face it. Who knows these players the best in the building? To me, it was the equipment people.
Yep.
Because they see him in a different light down there.
Oh, they do.
And also the trainers.
Yep.
They see him in a different light too.
Yep.
Their hair's down.
Yeah. Oftentimes they have less to, maybe you'd say less to gain by promoting that player as well. Again, they're going to be there, you know, with the next crop of players where, you know, you certainly get, you can get the sell job. You can get the salesman pitch by, again, even good coaches and, you know, people that you trust. Again, they like the kid. They want them to do well. So let's kind of stay along those lines. Stability in a franchise. Again, hard to find a more stable franchise across the front office and coaching staff than the Pittsburgh Steelers. Obviously, you've got four Super Bowls that are a credit to that. And again, really a franchise that a lot of other franchises kind of, again, whether they choose to adopt it or not, they're going to look, all right, well, how does Pittsburgh do things? Again, maybe they do it, maybe they don't. Again, how has scouting for a franchise with that stability helped you and helped you as a scout, you know, continue to do good work?
You know, it was a special, you know, time for me because of the fact that, you know, I had Kevin Colbert, you know, then the transition to Omar, Bill Cowher, the transition to Mike T, all the coaches, the scouting staff, even the support staff. But the person who made it the most special was Dan Rooney that passed away. We used to call him DMR, Dan Michael Rooney. And that guy had wisdom. He didn't have knowledge. He had wisdom. He would say things to you that you would go, wow, that's special. And I had a special relationship with him when he was alive because I had to go ahead and mentor a Native American lad from Lane Deer, Montana, who was in high school. And he wanted me to go ahead and mentor him. And that guy gave me a run for my money. And he became very successful. He's a law enforcement agent. And he went back to the Indian Reservation recently. And he's working law enforcement there. But he got out of it for a while, too, and all that stuff. But Mr. Rooney always wanted progress reports. And he would yell to the secretary, get Gorse in here now, you know. And then you'd be in a draft meeting. And Diane would go, you know, goes, hey, Mr. Rooney wants Gorse in here now. Tell him I'll be right in, you know. And so, you know, I go in there. I had carte blanche to walk right in at any time I wanted to, okay. So I walk in, and there he is. He's sitting at his desk, has a piece of paper in his hands. I get halfway there. I realize he's asleep. I went, oh, God, what am I going to do? So I start backing up. I'm going to knock on the door. I look on the couch. There was Ike Taylor, our starting left corner, sleep on the couch, and he has his own pillow. I'm like, oh, wow. Well, I knocked. He popped his head up. He goes, Gorse, I've been looking for you. Where you been at? I was in the draft meetings. You know those things, you know? He goes, ah, those aren't important. Sit down. I said, is this a good time for you? He goes, yeah, why wouldn't it be? He says, well, you know, Ike's over there sleeping on the couch. He goes, he sleeps here all the time. Don't worry about it. So that's the Steelers. You know, it's a family.
Yeah.
Makes you feel welcome. You got players sleeping on the owner's couch, you know? And he just had that way about him where everybody loved him and he had wisdom. He said, he always used to say, let it simmer. In other words, don't make a quick decision. Let it simmer. Let it simmer. And I sent that to Adam Peters of the Washington team and in a note because I'm a note writer. And I saw him in the hallway at the combine. He was going one way. I was going the other way. He said, hey, man, thanks for the note. I said, man, you get a chance to create, man. You're very fortunate. I said, hey, remember what Mr. Rooney said? Let it simmer. And he was mic'd and it got picked up. And someone called me and a couple people texted me. They heard that either through the combine coverage or whether it was Washington's own websites or whatever, you know. But he was that type of dude, man. He was just so common sense. And I think that's what made the organization really, really move because it was family. It still is family, but it's a transitional phase. You know, Art's taken over his son. You know, Art's not the same as his father, but no one is. No one's exactly the same as her father.
Right.
Omar's transitioning, you know, Mike's transitioning staff and all that stuff. But the family atmosphere made it so, so fun. I never had a contract in 28 years with Steelers.
Wow.
Wow.
And I had scouts used to tell me, you know, I'd demand a 2-3 year deal. And I used to say to them, well, if you do impeccable work, you don't need a contract. And I said, I guess you probably need a 5-year deal.
Yeah, jab them a little bit. That's good. Again, that's that culture. Again, we've talked about, again, the silos. Again, there some organizations have a coaching culture, and then they have a scouting culture, and then they have a business culture. And again, the tearing down of silos, some of the best franchise, again, it's a family. Again, it doesn't matter to a certain degree who is in charge, who is in a role, who's got certain titles, as long as that culture. And again, that is a Pittsburgh Steelers culture. It has to be, you know, managed from the top. But again, as long as that culture remains, It certainly does something for the entire franchise.
I've never seen an argument in the draft room.
Really?
28 years.
Wow.
You know, Kevin and Bill and Mike T, they worked so well together. And Mr. Rooney, you know, listened. He would may interject, but they came to a consensus that was best for the team. Okay. There was no egos outside the Steeler umbrella. Everything fit underneath that Steeler umbrella because it was all about the team.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way every organization should think, not have your own agendas or anything like that. And Steelers, you know, that was the ultimate, you know, and I'm so happy and proud. Plus, I'm from Pittsburgh, too, to go ahead and be able to go ahead and work for your hometown team for 28 years. Mm-hmm. Plus, I've never been fired, too, so that's pretty cool, too.
That's not many can say that, so... that's fantastic. Kind of transitioning from the scouting side of it, again, you are well known as being the 40 guy at the combine. How did that come about to where you picked up the whistle and became the 40 guy for the NFL combine?
I got roped into it. I was a sap. I didn't want to do that. What happened was, if you remember the old Cactus Bowl, when the Snow Bowl became the Cactus Bowl, and we had carte blanche, we would do everything to those young men, okay? We would do all the drills. We would time them in the 40. We would do shuttles. We just didn't do any jumps or anything like that. And Greg Miller, God rest his soul, he's passed away, of the Denver Broncos, was the national combine rep. Okay, for them. And he was running the Heif's weights, and you know, we're gonna do 40s and do shuttles and all that stuff before practice. And being an old combine guy, and Greg was a dear friend of mine, I said, Greg, if you need anything, you know, let me know, I'll do anything. So they were time in the 40s, and Greg goes, Mark, you said anything? I said, yeah. What do you need me to do? He goes, start the 40. I went, ooh, I don't know if I can do that. And he said, Mark. I said, yeah, I said anything. I'm a man of my word. So I started the 40. And C.O. Percato was there. And the guy I replaced, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but from Buffalo. I want to say Bobby Williams, but I may be wrong on that. But he got retired or whatever it may be, forced to retire, whatever happened to him. And they needed a new 40 guy. And after I did the 40 at the Cactus Bowl, CEO goes, yep, you're my man. I said, for what? You're going to do 40 at the combine. I said, no, I'm not. Yeah, you got to stand in front of everybody, man. Are you kidding me? You got the whole National Football League? It's like, nah, no thank you. Well, he called up Kevin Colbert and told Kevin that he needs me. And Kevin being Kevin and CEO being CEO, I got roped into it. Kevin goes, it'd be great because you get to learn all those players. You'll be down the floor. You're going to hear all the dirt, who's good, who's bad, and all that stuff. And you need to do it for the Steelers. And I said, okay. And then I wasn't very good at it first. And I had people complaining, you know, and all that stuff. And, you know, you grow into it. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden they put it on TV. You know, and it was like, you want me to do what? Wear a microphone? Are you kidding me? And then the cameras. There was times where I had cameras at my feet while I'm trying to start the 40 because they want to take a shot. I was like, hey, man, can you move over a little bit? I'm trying to work over here. Okay, mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That's how that all mushroomed,
mm-hmm.
You know, into what it is today. And, you know, I get a lot of accolades. If you walk into school when I was scouting and no one knew me, they would go, man, you look familiar to me. I was at a small school. It was Tiffin, okay? I didn't know anybody at Tiffin. So they kept looking at me. You look familiar. Well, I've never been here before. I never met any of you guys, you know. And I probably know people you know. And finally, a coach goes, you're the guy from 40. Yeah, I am. Well, that thing spread like wildfire. Now I got all the coaches want to come in and say hi to me, you know. And then I go to practice. The players are all staring at me. You know, I thought maybe my fly was down or something. You know, I didn't know. It was like, oh, wait, man. And they were all staring because they never had a guy. You know, they had NFL scouts, but he never had a guy that was the 40 guy.
Right.
That's how that all mushroomed. Yeah. You know, it's what it is today. Now it's like, you know, I'm a don't know if I'm a cult figure or whatever I am, but I get a lot of notoriety now and all that stuff because of it.
Yep.
But I'd like to tell you something about that combine. Okay, doing the 40. I just don't start the 40. There's me, Zach Conney, Justin Chabot, I mean. We kind of look, we the three of us and Adam McCone from NFL Network, we make that all flow now because of TV and all that stuff. My first year, man, I just started a 40. And after that, it was like, TV wanted to know when we're going to run it, or they're trying to force a time. And then between the three of us, Zach and Justin, we got together and I always ask Justin, "Hey man, when's the field drills going to be done?" And I see Zach, what about the jumps? And then the three of us set a time so every position group has enough time to warm up. And then you got to go ahead and prep the group leaders, got to prep the first three runners. You got to go ahead and get a hold of Adam for NFL Network, and say we're thinking about this time. He goes, "How about this time? It might be fudged by 5 minutes, whatever." But we all four of us work well together. And Jeff Foster, he just lets us do our thing. And we have no ego in it. Our goal is to do what's best for the players. And those people play a pivotal role in everything we do to make that flow down there.
Yeah, it's a team effort.
Mark, could I ask a question? Because obviously there's a progression of players and their athleticism, their training, all those kind of things. But in the last 3 years, we have seen an explosion of faster 40 times than we had, prior to that. And the Deion Sanders record, combine record stood for, X number of years, and then that was beaten this year. And that's just one of many. I mean, defensive backs are running faster. Receivers, everyone really. Is there something in that process that you just described where you've maybe made the warm-up time more compact or given them more time to get ready or anything along those lines? Any kind of vagaries that may have made it to where they're more prepared for the 40 and maybe they're not as cold or any number of things that you've seen that you could attribute to why suddenly there's been all these fast 40 times over the last 3 years?
Well, you always got to look at the training aspect of it, just because of that, because they get better training, they get better nutrition, they get better sleep, they get better everything. You can go online now. We're on Twitter, and you can see me start the 40 and hear the directions, which helps them out and preps them. So now their trainers have a better grasp about where their feet are at, holding, for three counts. Of that nature, things of that nature. But the training would be like it's Babe Ruth instead of eating hot dogs, slugging beers, and chasing women around. If he had better training, just think what he could have did back in that time period. And it was funny too, when the record was broken, I blew the whistle on him the first time. And I got booed because I had about 10,000 fans in there. So the crowd's booing me. And I thought that was pretty cool. He goes, "I'm having a boom." And I think I saw someone text me that DJ goes, "Oh, they're really getting on Mark today," because I blew the whistle on him. And then when he ran the 40, it was like, wow, I just wish he would have did the rest of the stuff now. I think the whole combine's becoming a la carte now.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
The again, the combine as a whole has become something different, right? Again, you think about 10 years ago, again, kind of the transition to, hey, we're actually going to televise it. And then it becomes, oh, we're going to televise it in prime time. Again, the schedule has changed. The timing of everything has changed. Obviously, the players have changed. The agents have changed alongside it. It's all changed. Ultimately, the combine is a piece of the puzzle for every one of these players. Again, we always talk about that. For certain players, certain elements of the combine matter more. For some guys, again, the 40 is going to matter a whole lot. For some guys, again, short shuttle or position drill. For some guys, again, what you do on field doesn't matter. In the grand scheme of things, we want interviews, medical, whatever it is. As the combine again becomes more a la carte, do you think players, you don't want every player to opt out of a bunch of stuff, but do you think the combine is continuing to get watered down because of the TV stuff, or do you think it will always be a big piece for a bunch of these prospects?
For the majority of them, yes. For the elite, no, because they're going to go ahead and opt out of things because they have elite tape. Okay, and if you start looking at the top 10 players, you know, the Lamar Jackson, I don't want to run the 40. I'm fast. Look at my tape. Sure is. You know what I mean? But those are the elite players that can go ahead and get away with it. You get some of the fringe guys, they need that. You know, probably, you know, more than half of them still need it. But the top maybe 20, 30, they need to go ahead and do a la carte.
Yeah.
But the rest of them, you know, it's kind of like, when you look at a person, you know, I'll bring this up and make a comparison about tape. Okay. A good one would be Neilan Marshall from Western Michigan. Okay. If you grade him by Pro Football Focus, he's not a very good football player. If you grade his tape and you say, man, this guy is good, and then you start telling people about him. Like I told Jim Nagy from Senior Bowl, I said, man, this guy's priority one, you know, invite, you know, tier one invite, you know? And he looked at, he goes, really? I go, yeah. Because you've seen a tape of him. He goes, no, but he goes, but Pro Football Focus grade isn't that very good. And I said, disruption's production. So then when he went to the Senior Bowl, man, everyone took notice of him. And then when he went to the combine, he showed up again. And I think that's important, okay? He, you know, for a guy like him, it's a big piece of his puzzle because he's not a premier player.
Right.
But he made himself into a premier player. He wouldn't shock me if he's in a, you know, early third round now, okay? But he's going to get drafted, and yep, someone's going to get a heck of a football player. But, you know, guys like that need that type of stuff. And then all of a sudden you get a guy to reassure himself. Mitchell from Toledo.
Yes.
Okay. You know, mid-major, some doubts, mid-major, not after Senior Bowl, not after the combine now. Yeah. That's all important critical factors for some of these people to prove themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, you just hit on, again, two MAC players, again, that have to show up against the biggest competition. Again, they look different. Again, especially on Quinion, he looked different than most of the competition he was facing. Again, it was one day down at the Senior Bowl practices that, yeah, all right, this guy is legit. He's doing, again, it looked the same against the Power Five guys that it did against who he was seeing all year.
Plus the fact he didn't have a lot of action his way because coaches weren't,
exactly,
they're not stupid. They don't know what to against him.
Yeah. Yeah, so those are the guys that, again, it really, again, through the process, the Senior Bowls, the East-Wests, the Combine, for those guys, yeah, you could definitely say it's a bigger piece of the puzzle. And, again, both of those guys are continuing. Again, every scout wants those guys to answer the questions in a positive way. Most scouts, again, forget their grade. I want this guy to do really well, have success, again, show out in every role. So, that's really good for both those guys and both guys that I think we may be hearing one name in the first round. And again, maybe end of day two for the other one. And but again, both going to be good football players in the NFL for a long time.
Mark, I would like to dig in. We gotta have some fun here.
Go ahead. I like fun.
2004 NFL draft. Eli Manning goes number one. Philip Rivers goes number four. JP Losman goes number 22. Y'all take Ben Roethlisberger. Let's see, where are we?
The 11th, I believe.
11, number 11. Was there any thought of moving up and getting one of the big two guys? Was there any thought of sliding back and or maybe taking a Losman there? As I recall, I think he went into the season with a number one national grade among all quarterbacks. Take us through the first round and why you settled on Big Ben there.
Phil Kreidler and Kevin went live to see him play. And that's when they fell in love with him. I fell in love with him just, I didn't scout him, off of tape. But every time I watched TV, it was like, God, this guy's productive. He had a heck of a game against LSU when they opened up the season. We didn't have much discussion about, trading up into the top two because, draft capital and all that stuff. Kevin would make trades, but they were real calculated. when we traded up for Troy Polamalu, he felt confident that he was going to get a good football player at 11. He was just going to hold water. Okay. And a funny story was Kevin and Phil went to see him play live, okay, at Miami, Ohio. And they ran out of gas on the highway. Okay. Phil ran out of gas. Okay. You got to know Phil. Okay. So this was the time when they had the Ohio sniper. Okay. And then he was firing at cars and all that stuff. And I said, hey, the Ohio sniper, he wanted to fire at you guys because he thought it was a setup. No one's dumb enough to go ahead and run out of gas. You know? But we're glad we got Ben and all that stuff, and it just all worked out and all fell the right way. But that's how the draft works sometimes, man. Things just fall right into your lap and you go, wow, But like I said, there's never been any discussion or Ron Hughes, when he was alive, our scouting coordinator, he had a big phrase. His phrase was, it's okay to disagree. You don't have to be disagreeable. And we had people disagree on things in the draft room, but nobody was disagreeable. And that's the way it should be in life.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, when you get your franchise quarterback where you do, and again, ride guys like that for as long as you did, that makes a big difference. And again, you hit on an element that, again, every fan, agent, even scout sometimes, again, that patience aspect. Again, you talked about it with Troy. Again, Kevin believed at a number 11, we're going to get a good player. We're going to be patient. We're going to sit on it. That can be one of the hardest things, again, for anybody in the football world, is to be patient. Again, let it simmer. Like you said, we don't have to do anything right now. We can wait. Let's just see how it falls. Again, stick to your plan, stick to your board. Again, when you have all the things that the Steelers do in place, culture, stability, again, an understanding of the way you're going to operate, it certainly helps. How is there a way a scout out there, an agent out there, can practice patience other than, hey, yeah, just be patient?
I think we live in a world where we lack patience now.
Yeah,
just
yeah, definitely agree.
Because of we're instant gratification. We don't think of ramifications when we go ahead and make decisions. And I think that's the biggest thing that young people and also organizations miss on. Okay, because they have no patience. And you look at some of the owners in sports right now, what are they? Hedge firm people, mm-hmm. who in billions, make millions of dollars in microseconds and can lose it in microseconds because of the hedge firms and all that stuff. And I think the new owners got to learn patience. Mm-hmm. If you look at some of the owners, they have none. And I think that's why they're organizations are in disarray. You win because of ownership. They set the tone. There's no question about that. You got to get everyone else on the same page without ego for the team.
Yep. Yeah. Again, patience throughout. And again, those guys in charge, ownership on down, GM, head coach, your directors, again, those have to be the ones when they get somebody knocking on their door, hey, we got to do something. Let's go after this guy. Say, hey, patience. Part of the plan. What are some of the other players, maybe the really a unique scouting report or a really fun situation, guys over the years that you scouted, that you were a part of, that you, again, you kind of think back on and were like, wow, that was one that I just really remember, really fun. Who are some players?
I don't think in those terms. I really, really don't, because everyone always says, who have you scouted? Who's some of the greatest players? Who's some of the Hall of Famers? All that stuff. I really don't think in those terms, because being with the Steelers, it's always about the team. And if you're going to take credit for somebody that you found this, found that, that's ego. It's not about the team. And what people don't realize, which I know you guys do, the process is such that there's going to be three scouts, mm-hmm. looking at an A player that's going to be in the first three rounds. And there's going to be the offensive coordinator or defense, the coordinator, offense, defense, and the position coach. And I've been blessed to having Bill Cowher and also Mike Tomlin. And Mike takes watch and tape of players to a different level. And also having a GM that watches tape and Kevin Colbert. So the consensus is a lot easier, okay, to go ahead and say this guy's the guy. Now, if you're going to go ahead and claim people, you better claim all your screw ups too.
Absolutely.
It's kind of like I gave Tom Brady a free agent grade. I admit that. I have the report. But then you start talking to all these other people now that he's retired and all this stuff. Oh, I had a third round. One former general manager said he had a first rounder. It's like, get out of here, man. After the fact, everybody's always right. Get out of
Always.
here. It's like when I went to a Michigan game this year. I hadn't been to Michigan for a long time. So I went for the Senior Bowl and I'm at the media gate and there's this old lady there and she goes, "Oh, welcome to the big house." "Oh, thank you, ma'am. Have you ever been here before?" I go, "Yeah, about 20 some odd years ago." She goes, "Why'd you come?" I said, "Well, I came to see Tom Brady to give him a free agent grade." And her mouth dropped. But those are the things you got to admit to, like your mistakes. Everyone knows, the old phrase in scouting, my mother knows he's a first rounder. You know what I mean? So what about the other guys? What about the little guys that make it big and all that stuff? That you stood not stood, stood on the table, but you said, "We'd like to have this guy as a free agent." And then you sign him and the team signs him. I didn't sign him, and his name's Chris Hubbard, and he develops into a guard center tackle combination and signs with Cleveland for 20 some odd million signing bonus. That was an undrafted free agent. And I was the only real scout at his workout. Everybody else set the interns to UAB at that time period. And people didn't know how to do broad. They didn't know, oh God, it was something else. I had to teach, I was, I did the vertical. I had to teach young scouts how to do the broad jump. It was like, you got to be kidding me. You sent these guys, gave me no training. Oh, it was mind opening. But guys like that's the guys you really appreciate because they worked. Kevin Colbert had a phrase, hearts and smarts. We make our own mistakes based upon the heart. Did he love it well? Did he love it? Did he really want it that bad? Will he do anything for it? And the smarts. Okay. Was he smart enough to figure it out? Pick up the scheme. Okay. Learn how to, the whole process or a combination of both. And he's so right with that phrase. Kevin created that. He coined that phrase and hearts and smarts, man. We all know about the Tom Brady's, the Chris Hubbard's and all that stuff, because obviously their heart and smart was a lot bigger than, the Ryan Leafs and other people, but
But
we
see
all
that part that kind of makes my point. I mean, there are scouts who subscribe to the philosophy that, Tom Brady was drafted in the sixth round because he was a sixth rounder. I mean, you're talking about a guy who played 1 year really at Michigan. He's battling Drew Henson the whole time. Everyone's seen what his body looked like when he went to the combine. I'm not talking. I mean, he's not the guy with he didn't have a. I mean, he's got a strong arm. It's not a legendary rocket kind of arm. I mean. But he went to a program where Roderick would say the greatest NFL coach of all time was. He had the spirit and the heart that you can't measure. What I mean, what some could argue he was a sixth rounder. We didn't know that he was the guy. He had the heart beating inside of him that Tom Brady had. We didn't know that he'd have all those kind of things. I mean, what are your thoughts there? I mean, was he evaluated correctly? Did he go about where he should have been, or should someone have recognized, hey, this guy should be this is going to be the future Hall of Famer? Should he have gone higher in the draft? I mean, what are your thoughts there?
Oh God, we saw that picture. You had that linear, smooth, sucking in chest, looked like a pro golfer body. Now he's a model, that son of a gun. I wish I had a body like that. But you just don't know any of that stuff, man. I know Drew Henson, because he did an internship with us, and he works also with the Senior Bowl as a group leader and all that, and they battled back and forth. Drew had more playing time, and at the end, he had the last two games. Tom did, and he blew up the Rose Bowl, if I remember correctly, and that's how he became a sixth round draft pick. And that's usually the guys who are, they're at the bottom end of your draft board. And sometimes you take a swing at and all that stuff, and it happened. This we take subjectivity and then make it into objectivity. That's what scouting is. We take opinions on tape, opinions of people at the school, what their character's like. Okay. And we take other people's opinions on tape within the scouting department. Okay. And the coaches and all that stuff. We blend them into objectivity. This is what this guy is programmed to fail. And that was one we failed.
Yeah. I mean, your sixth and seventh round picks, again, you start getting into organizational philosophy. Again, maybe you get some different stuff year by year. But again, those sixth and seventh round picks, you get a lot of developmental guys. Again, small school guys that, hey, he just needs a program, maybe a red shirt year. Again, there's something there. We just still got to figure it out. Or on the flip side, you get some organizations like this guy trait-wise, again, what he can do on the field. I think he may be at his peak, but that character, that heart, that intelligence, this guy's going to be this guy's a, you know, 10, 50, this guy's going to be on a roster for a long time because he is always going to be there and reliable. Again, that character piece, was there a way that, again, you, the Steelers kind of went about those later round picks as you kind of looked at those guys? Was there a way you leaned where, again, with Tom Brady, maybe you looked at the traits like, hey, you know, his traits are sufficient for the NFL. Maybe they're good in some areas, but again, that those intangibles are just off the charts to where it's like, yeah, we can take a chance on this guy in the sixth round. What kind of, how did you guys address either those types of guys or those later round picks?
We usually stuck by our draft board. Okay. We didn't deviate. You may deviate off of it based upon character. Okay. You may have a guy you have rated into the third round, and because he's a, you know, pain in the butt, okay, or he has some character issues or flaws that you can accept, and you can accept taking him in the sixth round versus the third round.
Mm-hmm.
Because that way, if it fails out, you're not losing a lot as far as, you know, money and all that stuff and draft status and, you know, salary cap. So you may do it that way. Also, you know, we never really took a stab. Like some people take stabs at people because of size, height, weight, speed, and all that stuff in late rounds. We were pretty close to the vest. Now, what happened later on in scouting, there's too much group thinking after a while. And after probably about for us, it was always about the 42, the first 42 picks, first 43 picks that, you know, it came the way we liked it. Then after that, it became diluted because too much group scouting, too much same opinions. And then the board just starts coming off real clean. Mm-hmm. Then you get near the bottom. Now you may have to take a stab or two because some of the guys you really wanted, you thought would have been there, came off already.
Yep.
You know how it is, man. Cover corners you can't tackle. Always a big run in the fourth
yep.
round, right?
Yep.
And there's always a run on something, you know, because it's a lack of.
Yep.
Were they all fourth rounders? Nope. But they were cover corners, even though they couldn't tackle, they could cover.
Yep.
You know, so, you know, it just changed, you know, the thinking later on in life because of the board coming off real clean towards near the bottom.
Yep. Yeah, certainly. So doing a number of things to stay involved in football, where do you see scouting going? Again, it's gotten popular. Everybody, again, there are guys, young guys, personnel guys, people everywhere and gals these days that want to be scouts in the NFL. Where do you see the scouting world going, and where do you think teams need to be conscious of taking their scouting departments?
First of all, because of the fact the colleges have patterned themselves after National Football League, you have more and more young people being exposed to football that want to get in scouting because they're working in recruiting departments. You know, I mentor a lot of young men and women, and I try to help them with their resumes and their cover letters and all that stuff. But it still comes down to competition and the experiences. And the experiences some of these people are getting down at the college level is just phenomenal. You know, so the higher competition to get in for the fewer spots. You know, then I'm a big proponent, you know, women, I see nothing wrong with it. I'm a very open-minded person. I'm not, I don't see race. I don't see gender. I don't see any of that stuff. I don't care if you're Post Malone and Jelly Roll, you got tattoos on your face. It don't bother me. You know what I mean?
Yep.
All it is style and a trend. I'm open-minded about life. So I embrace that. You know, I like to see more women involved. There's nothing wrong with it. But it's just so tough to break in right now. And I try to tell these people, you know, the young people, better have a parallel plan. You know, it's elitist, which we all know, to get into the National Football League, to scout, to coach, whatever, to have a job in it. There's only 32 teams, although they're increasing some scouting staffs and all that stuff. There's a lot more now than ever before when I started. But the bottom line is, if you can't get in, what are you going to do? You know, if you want to get involved in football, there's just so many ways now because of all the colleges and the amount of jobs they created where you can make a pretty good penny. Look at some of these scouts that were working the colleges, general managers or director of player personnel. So the big trend now, I think, is going to be is ex-scouts doing portal because they're looking for NFL talent. You know, and that's what they want in the portal situation. Okay, guys, they have NFL potential, but it's just so tough right now. You know, God, you know, I entertain probably 3 to 5 phone call, texts, emails about, you know, people want to get in scouting, what my recommendations are, how to do things, and all that stuff. And I have over 20 people, either directly or indirectly, in National Football League scouting because they listen to me. I gave them a path. Okay, I gave them a map. And those that can do it on their own and work for themselves usually get ahead. Those that want me to work for them, I don't have time for you. You know, because you got to pursue it, you know, yourself, and you got to really be creative about it.
Yeah,
So,
a lot of
Mark, I've
people.
got obviously there, I've been fortunate to work with a few people that are trying to get in as well, and my word of advice is always build your network. I think that at the end of the day, your network is what gets you in and keeps you in. What word of advice would you give to someone on how to best build their network and build a series of people that are willing to go to bat for them and then believe in them, that will encourage them, will give them constructive advice when they need it? What's the best way to do that, Mark?
I think when you network in schools, if you're working in a college situation, okay, and the scouts are coming in, you gotta let them know what your goals are, where you want to be at, and you gotta be persistent at it without being a pest to them. And everybody has different levels of pestivity, if that's a word. If not, it should be.
It
Okay.
is now.
Well, good. Put it in. Hope
Just
Webster
joined.
puts in a dictionary. Because I'm from Pittsburgh, I say a lot of colorful things, but the bottom line is, you know, that you network that way, but you got to be sincere. You better have the personality and the rapport to win people over to build that relationships. And I think in today's world, because of the instant gratification and you know news links or short articles or video or Twitter or Instagram, TikTok. I like all the social platforms, don't get me wrong. Okay, but to build relationships, okay, to get someone to trust you, to have exchange information ideas, okay, it's a give take thing. I got to give you something, you got to give me something, and all that stuff. But to be able to do that in a way of building trust. Now, I think that's, you know, things, I think young people don't know how to build relationships, don't know how to be a connector. That's just why I see that the young scouts going to schools don't have time, they're rushing around, gotta get to the next school because there's so much tape available. They ain't worried about watching tape there like we used to when we had to. They're not, you know, they don't want to go ahead, and I'm big note writer. Okay. My notes are hanging a lot of colleges, and I write congratulation notes. I write, you know, sometimes I just write a note because a person did a nice job. I just want to thank him when I did a school visit. And I meant that as being honest and sincere. And the steward note card I had my business card at the bottom. Okay. And then what happens is those guys will text you. Hey man, got your card. Thank you. And then you walk in their office and it's hanging there because you built that relationship and they're going to help you get places, but you're going to help them get places also. I don't think we spend enough time building those relationships. I think young people who want to get in better start building relationships in that fashion.
Certainly, I certainly that was a lesson for me when I went from pro scouting to college scouting. As a pro scout, you get accustomed to sitting in an office and not really seeing anybody, maybe a few coaches here and there, but you're grinding a lot of tape. When I went out on the road in 2019, it was quickly apparent to me that it was time to build some relationships and really take even the relationships I had deep in those relationships. It is, again, scouting, gaining information, have rapport with your coaches, have rapport with your other scouts, with other teams. Again, it's all about relationships. And again, it is a harder thing to do. Seems like younger people have a harder time with that. So definitely something a lot of people have to work on.
It's funny, like Mike Tomlin in the morning, he walks the whole building. Okay, he spends more time in certain areas like the weight room, the locker room, the training room, but he'll go say hi to everybody. Even if it's just for just a hello. Walk past the business, walk past the secretaries. He'll connect with everybody, building a relationship. And when I went to a school visit, I did the same thing. I talked to the secretaries. I got to know the secretaries. Some of the secretaries, when they retired, they texted me or called me to tell me they're retiring and all that stuff. That brings a little tear to your eye. You made an impression to them, okay? Or you bring 2 dozen sliders in the morning, donuts in the morning. Even though there's a plethora of food now in the buildings, they got cafeterias and all that stuff. Man, you put your business card on there, man. They see that I'm in the house. My nickname is Gorson House, man. They'd be texting me, "Hey, man, where you at? I'm in the wide receiver room. I'll be down in a minute. Come see you because you built those relationships. Or you treated the little people real well. The GAs. First visit, one of my first visits, Washington State, old Boulder Gym. Went upstairs to watch tape in this closet. There's three rum dums in there. I thought they were rum dums. I realized they weren't. One guy was the video slash kicking GA. So that was bad because he had to go ahead and break down all the film. It was VHS at that time period. Offensive GA, defensive GA. I'm watching tape in there talking to him, all that stuff, Well, little did I realize the kicking video guy was Brian Lowe, who created DV Sports. He's a multimillionaire. Okay. Half the systems of college and pro football's DV Sport or XOs. And also, he does a majority of the replays on professional sports and college sports. Offensive GA was James Franklin. Okay. He turned out all
Yeah,
right.
he's doing
And then
okay.
Kevin Sumlin was the other guy.
There's a couple big names there.
And I still have James's cell phone number. Later on, after he left, we all got cell phones. Exact same one from another stop he had after. It might have been Idaho State or something like that when he was there. But those guys grow up and they talk to you yet. You know what I mean?
Again, that's a lesson in there of itself. Again, you never know who you're going to be talking to, right? Again, I've heard scouts, step into room, coaches step into room, and again, they don't know who else is in the room, what other relationships that person has, where that person's going, and they start riffing or complaining or doing anything about, again, you don't know who's that person going to go tell right there. Again, who You always gotta be mindful of who's in the building, and again, whether they're anybody, a name at that point, they may become a name down the road, just like those guys you were sitting in. So,
Hey man, GAs grow up to be head coaches.
that's they all start somewhere. So,
Boss up.
Mark, this has been fantastic. If people had questions for you, wanted to follow you, wanted to reach out to you, are you on social media? I think you said you were. Is there a spot where people can get you?
I'm on Twitter and I actually post life lessons. Okay. I have 92 one-page life lessons, that I'm starting to post them. Some of them get, 3,000, 6,000 hits, things of that nature. But on Twitter, I'm at GORS55, Gorse 55. It's my nickname and my college football number.
Yep, there.
So.
That's perfect. Make sure you get on there, give him a follow. It's been a fantastic conversation, and hopefully we can have Mark on again in the future. Before we jump off here, let me remind you, go and check out Agent Live 360. you're an agent in branding and marketing, if you've got clients to keep track of, make sure you hop on there. Do a demo. Sign up for a demo. I'll walk you through. We can talk some football as well. That's agentlive360.com. Make sure you get signed up. Mark, appreciate you being on. What is the rest of the week? You going to be on the road doing some scouting anytime soon?
No, I'm going to go. I'm going to help. I'm helping out the Big 12 Pro Day. Okay. And that's interesting what their concept is and all that stuff and the marketing aspect of it. You know, I'll be starting the 40 for that. And I helped some of the organization aspect of it too with all the scouts. But, you know, the scouts did the vast majority of the work on that. So it'll be interesting to see how that turns out. And I did the HBCU combine besides the regular combine. Spoke at Kent State football, so anybody's looking for a cheap speaker, let me know. And I told them the chances of making the National Football League. And yep. A couple of close friends hit me up, University of Florida and University of Michigan, to go ahead and do a little scouting seminar, which I did in the fall because I knew both guys who asked me from the schools when they were nobodies. You know, so I didn't charge them or anything like that. It was just my way of giving back because I think you have to give back because The only reason why I'm where I'm at today is because these old scouts, these old crusty dudes took care of me and helped me out. So you always got to give back.
Yep, absolutely. Well, you'll certainly stay busy with football, just like everybody out there that loves football. They're going to be into it. Wave two of free agency is getting on us, and teams continue to take shape prior to the draft, and the draft is getting a little bit closer every day. So if you're out there, you love football, don't just watch it, but keep scouting.